There's a swing and a fly ball right center field. This one's deep. Gutierrez is on the run. He won't be able to get that one off the wall. Rounding third, heading home is Upton, and Moya will cruise into second with a back-to-back RBI double. 2-0 Tigers here in the second.
Well, another off-speed pitch, and boy, we're watching a young man that has made some terrific changes the other times he's been up.
The 1-2. Fly ball left field. This one's deep. Got some carry to it, and it's gone, a home run. James McCann with a big two-run home run. The 1-0 pitch. In the dirt. He gets by the catcher, Iannetta. Maben scores. Tigers win.
When we play whoever we're supposed to, and part of that streak was like 3 weeks ago. So it's like, you know what I mean, just think we just, if we play good, we give ourselves a chance, and if we don't, we give the other team a better chance.
With the first pick, the Philadelphia 76ers select Ben Simmons from Melbourne, Australia, and Louisiana State University. With the second pick, the Los Angeles Lakers select Brandon Ingram from Duke University.
Here we go.
With the third pick, the Boston Celtics select Jaylen Brown from the University of California, Berkeley. The Phoenix Suns select Dragan Bender from Croatia. He last played for Maccabi Tel Aviv. With the fifth pick, the Minnesota Timberwolves select Chris Dunn from Providence College. The Chicago Bulls select Denzel Valentine from Michigan State University.
Pistons
pick. With the 18th pick in the 2016 NBA Draft, the Detroit Pistons select Henry Ellenson from Marquette University. With the 20th pick, the Indiana Pacers select Caris LeVert from the University of Michigan.
With the 31st pick, Deontay Davis from Michigan State University.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
What's going on? Welcome to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Glad to have you aboard with us on what we like to call a free-for-all Friday. And as you just heard from the montage by Jim Cushlin, it's kind of going to be just that way. A little baseball, a little basketball, a little NBA draft, maybe a little bit of Olympic news to talk about. Not a whole lot in the NFL, actually, but we still have a lot of different things we can get into on this afternoon program. And what we love about Fridays, that's why we call it free-for-all. It really literally is. We could be talking about one thing, take your phone call on a totally different subject, and away we go. Let's do it, because we just don't care. Whatever direction you want to go in, if you got badminton thoughts you want to share with us, well, then by all means, educate us on badminton, and we'll have the conversation. So be a part of it at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. A couple of new Pistons have been announced, as you just heard, at least one of them anyway you heard. There are no new Cavaliers, because Cavs did not have any picks last night.
But there is.
Yep, I was just going to say, continue.
Oh, I was just going to say, I know they obviously grabbed the rights to, I can't remember his name now, for crying out loud.
Kay Felder of right here in the backyard, the Oakland Golden Grizzlies of the Horizon League.
How about that? So, you know, what it means is pretty much nothing to next year for the Cavaliers. But we do have some things to talk about with the draft. And since you mentioned the backyard, Jim Cushlin, we can talk a little bit about Michigan's Chris LeVert going, Denzel Valentine, obviously, we talked a lot about yesterday. Talk about Stan Van Gundy's reaction to the Pistons draft. There's a lot of good things to be said. High marks, according to almost all of the reports that I've been reading. Most people are very pleased. Certainly Stan Van Gundy is happy, because didn't he say that Ellenson was somewhere in the neighborhood of 10th on their board?
Yeah.
And he didn't think there was any way that the Marquette player would get down to number 18. And yet there he was, Stan Van Gundy, talking about
it. Are you satisfied with the depth of this draft, that you'll be able to get somebody who could potentially help you there?
Yeah. I mean, you know, potential is the word. I mean, you know, you never know. It's not perfect. But, yeah, we like the group that we think, you know, we'll have available to us. And
I'm not positive if this is a clip where he actually mentions Ellenson or not. This is a pre-obviously draft clip, but I did hear him say that he thought that there was no way that particular kid was going to get down there or fall down there to 18. And when he was, my goodness, they were thrilled with that. So we're going to talk a little bit about the draft. We are going to talk a lot about baseball today. And why not? Look at what's coming. the red hot, and I mean piping red hot, Cleveland Indians steamrolling into Comerica tonight to take on the not quite equally but also very hot Detroit Tigers. A very, very close race going on in the American League Central right now. What a pitching matchup tonight. The guy who's been the most consistent for the Indians all year, 8-3, Danny Salazar, with a 2.23 ERA.
Second in the American League in that.
I'm sorry?
Second in the American League in that ERA.
Thank you, sir. And then, of course, opposing right-hander Jordan Zimmermann, who's 9-3 with a 3.24. So you're talking about a tremendous pitching matchup. And when I say red hot, the Indians, in case you're wondering, have completed back-to-back series sweeps of the White Sox and then Tampa for an undefeated 6-0 homestand, overall a 6-0 six-game winning streak, also an 11-game home winning streak, and since they are on the road for the rest of the month and then some, a 10-gamer now that they launch tonight in Detroit, the Indians end the month of June with an undefeated home 11-0 record. I don't know when the last time they had an 11-0 or an undefeated month in their own ballpark, but their pitching has just been phenomenal. Corey Kluber two nights ago goes the distance, complete game, three-hit shutout. So what does Trevor Bauer do last night? Matches him, except for the shutout part. Trevor Bauer gets his second career complete game. He holds the Rays to a single run, also three hits, complete game. Like I said, the only difference being the one run allowed. And guess what? 10 strikeouts to one walk. Trevor Bauer is without question pitching like he belongs at the middle toward the front end of a Major League Baseball rotation. And that is amazing given the depth of this particular baseball rotation, Kush.
Yeah, and that we have said from the very beginning is going to be the strength of the Indians. And what they're going to be able to do is going to be based a lot on specifically that starting rotation. For the most part, you know, it's panning out. They got a couple of interesting ones. You mentioned Salazar. I believe Tomlin at some point is going over the weekend as well. And it, basically our thoughts was, well, where they would end up in the standings is also dependent on the other aspects, specifically offensively. And they've been doing just enough.
I don't even bring that up right now. Let's stay with their arms. Let's stay with the arms. Because, and obviously, by the way, what's really fun, Jim, that we've got coming up at 3:35 in about 20 minutes. You normally, we talk with Anthony Fenwick, of course, who is a Detroit Free Press writer covering the Tigers on their beat. And we talk usually weekly with Zach Meisel, who covers the Indians and all Cleveland sports out of Cleveland. And today, since the two clubs are getting together in a very, very interesting, I still don't know if we can use the word big in the middle of June or even late June. You know, I guess it could be big from a confidence standpoint, you know, with two teams that are
I think it's a little bigger for the Tigers since they're 0-6 against the Indians this season after dominating them for so long.
Yeah, that's true, too. But, I mean, in terms of the standings, I don't necessarily think it's going to be a huge – I mean, unless one team sweeps the other, and
right.
I don't know if that's going to happen. But even if, you know, if they whoever goes 2-1 or 1-2, obviously there's only a game change in the standings.
Yep.
So we
can't
say
the Tigers are four back as of this moment, and the Indians have a 3-game lead over Kansas City.
Right. So I mean, it would be a game difference if the Tigers take 2 out of 3, or if the Indians take 2 out of 3, it's a game difference, one way or the other. So you know, we can't say it's big like in, you know, it's going to have a say in the division championship, but it's big from a. Hey, this is late June, and hey, like you've said, the Tigers haven't beaten the Indians, and there are great pitching matchups, our best, your best, from both sides, essentially, with Salazar going against Jordan Zimmermann today. Not so much tomorrow, because that's a Carlos Carrasco, Anibal Sanchez matchup. Sanchez getting another start after, of course, being demoted to the pen.
I think that's huge for him, though. I mean, we've seen his poor performances overall this year for Sanchez. He gets sent to the bullpen. You can't really use he's still hurt. That was last year's legitimate excuse. So that could potentially be a big start for Anibal Sanchez. If he can start getting anything going, the Tigers are all the much stronger for
him. Not potentially. It is a big start for him. No doubt about it. It's a big start for him, and it's a big start for them. No question about it. And it won't be easy because Carlos Carrasco, coming off of the DL, of course, has worked his way back slowly but surely and is starting to become the same dominant guy he was at the start of the season and really for the most part of last season. He finished the season last year probably, I would say, right there is maybe their best, most consistent starter. So Carrasco and Sanchez tomorrow. Then Josh Tomlin, who's 8-1 with a 3.32, outstanding season. I mean, that's all-star caliber. against Verlander, who's 7-5 with a 3.78. Probably not as all-star caliber, but he's Justin Verlander, and if the ERA is under 4, he is dangerous as all get out. So it's a really, really interesting, without saying big, late June matchup between the Indians and the Tigers. So in honor of that, we're going to have Zach Meisel from Cleveland, who covers the Indians, and Anthony Fenech from Detroit, who covers the Tigers. We usually have them on separately. We're going to have them on together because they're going to be in the same press box. We're going to pull them both in together at Comerica, and at 3:35, we're going to get a little preview. And the best part about that, Jim, for anybody who listens to this show regularly, they've heard Meisel perhaps, let's say, not keeping the baseball beat writer code very much, in that what stays on the road, I'm sorry, what happens on the road stays on the road. What happens in the box stays in the box. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. He has ratted out Fenech for a few little peccadilloes, and we've had Fenech on the air ratting out Meisel too. So the two rats have just been having a very friendly and fun little rivalry. Reporting on the other's press box antics are going to go face to face, head to head, voice to voice, whatever you want to call it, right here. So that's going to be an awful lot of fun. I said let's stay away from the bats for a moment in that in this series, Jim, because I wanted to get to the pitching. And let me give you some specifics as to where they are. The Indians have won 6 straight, matches their longest winning streak of the season for the second time. All 5 wins came on the club's just-completed homestand. The Indians have outscored opponents 38-11 during the 6-game streak. And you might think that's talking about the offense, and I guess it kind of is, because I'll point out the 38 runs came on a team batting average of 323 in that 6-game streak. 25 extra base hits, but this is what's best. It's the pitching staff, top to bottom, second best. Didn't you say second best in ERA, team ERA right now in the American League?
Team? I'm not sure of team. I know Salazar's was. Salazar specifically is second in the AL in ERA right now.
Well, Jim, I think, to be honest with you, I don't have it in front of me, but I think both are true. I think as a team, I think they are.
They very well could be. Yeah. With the way the Indian starting staff is going, that very well could be true. I'll check.
Well, hold on. I think I have it. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I was wrong. They're first. They have the best pitching.
Even better.
Yeah. Not just in the American League either. Is this all of baseball? No, this is just the American League. Let me do all of baseball and see where it is just for fun, okay? All of baseball. Oh, yeah, they're sixth because the National League is just ridiculous with pitching. The National League, listen to the top 5 team ERAs in baseball. You ready for this? Cubs, National League, 2.76. That's 2.76 as a team. That's sick. Mets, 3.19. Dodgers, 3.32. Nationals, 3.33. Giants, 3.39. Then the first American League team onto that list is the Indians with a team ERA of 3.57. So they're first in the American League, sixth overall in all of baseball with their pitching. And now more specific to the point I was making, in this 6-game winning streak, their pitching staff has a 1.64 ERA and a 1.62 batting average against. They are all 6 games got quality starts by the rotation, 6.2 innings plus in all 6 games. The bullpen has an ERA of 1.00 during that stretch and a 1.82 batting average against. So, I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's the starters dominating or the pen coming in expertly guided and every string being pulled just right by Terry Francona. The Indians pitching staff is just a beast. We knew going in, as you started to say, Jim, that the key, they were going to get pitching and the key was going to be hitting. But to say, you know, you knew they were going to get pitching is a little different than seeing the kind of pitching they're getting.
Right.
They're getting dominant pitching. You know, we thought they could have one of the better staffs or the better rotations in the American League. We didn't necessarily think the best in the American League and sixth in all of baseball, and yet that's where they sit. And that's what Brad Ausmus's lineup is going to have to contend with tonight and over the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the Tigers, you know, to give them their due, they get a sweep over Seattle during the week at Comerica Park, which is the first time they've swept anybody apparently at home in 4 since 2012, and the first time they swept the Mariners in 4 in Detroit since apparently 1980. They got some walk-off hits. They got a late rally, a 1-game. Steven Moya, who's up because of J.D. Martinez, busted elbow. He homered twice, and he's been looking like that. that. Big hitting, big time prospect, which is part of the reason he was one of the very few prospects these last couple seasons that's been untouchable in Tigers trades that we know have been happening and are possibly likely to happen again. There's a reason he's been one of the untouchables. So he's been playing, you know, very, very well in that time. And, you know, if you're the Tigers or any team in baseball, you get some, you know, late wins, some walk-off wins. It helps build some confidence and momentum.
No question about it. You know, a four-game sweep of the Mariners that you mentioned.
Five, and Mariners aren't half bad this year either. It's not like this is a team that's about to lose 100 games.
No, exactly right. And they're getting contributions from different guys, including, as you point out, with J.D. Martinez down. You get Moya and Justin Upton, of course, has been hot. You've been waiting. Everybody's been waiting for
him. Yeah, no kidding.
And he finally is doing it, and he's becoming a little more consistent. Be interesting now, though, to see how this this Tigers lineup does against the Indians tonight, and this, again, pitching. You know, quite frankly, it's going to sound strange, but you know, I'm not trying to oversell the Indian staff, but really, I was about to say the Tigers are running into three of the Indians' best pitchers, but I could honest to God say that no matter what three were going in this series. I mean, they miss Kluber, and it's like still, it's still brutal. Because you got Salazar.
And that's what happens when you have a really good rotation.
That's what I mean. I mean, it's not like they're going against the Indians 1, 2, and 3 in their pitching rotation. It doesn't matter if they're going against 3, 4, and 5. Because, you know, they're going to miss Kluber, but they got to face Salazar and his 2.23 ERA. They got to face Carrasco, whose, you know, ERA isn't as good because it's, what is it, 3, I want to say 7.5 or somewhere in that neighborhood right now. I thought I had it a moment ago. Hold on, I might still have it. Where did it go? Ah, doggone it. I'll find Carrasco's.
3.26.
3.26. And that's, again, pitching with, you know, coming back from his injury, where he was coming back very slowly from the DL. And we know that his ERA prior to the getting injured, and then, of course, how dominant he was last year, was sub-3. He's tremendous. And then Josh Tomlin is 8-3 with, 8-1, I beg your pardon. And he's got the ERA of around 3.7, I think it was.
Well, if you're looking for numbers, Bob, you know, this kind of sums it up. Of the five-man rotation right now, you know, with Carrasco back, the highest ERA is Kluber's 3.59.
Wow.
That's the highest of the four.
That's amazing.
Or the five, I should say.
That is amazing. And Corey Kluber, by the way, just happens to be one of the best starters in the American League.
I mean, and a former Cy Young winner.
And a former Cy Young winner, exactly right. Think about that for a moment. So my point to all of that was I want to see how Miguel Cabrera, who has traditionally absolutely owned the Indians. I used to joke when he would, you know, even earlier this season when he went to Cleveland, that he actually is a part owner of the Indians because he owns part of Progressive Field. He has just made it his own. So it'll be interesting going to get up against these arms tonight. Miggy and Victor Martinez, the former Indian, FYI. Couple of numbers for you, game notes tonight. Miggy is hitting 348. With a hundred, that's 204 for 586. With 110 runs scored, 32 doubles, 40 home runs, and 129 RBIs in 153 career games against the Indians.
Wow.
Now let's just say that again, 153 career games, you might call that a regular season.
That's the full season,
that's
basically.
A season, you know, I mean, there's 162, you don't play all of them, you get rest here and there if you're so in a season against the Indians, 348, 40, and 129. Triple crown numbers.
Goodness.
Against the Indians. So that's Miggy against Cleveland pitching. And I think they're going to need some of that production tonight, given the way the Indians have been pitching and also swinging the bats, which I know you wanted to get into. We will. Victor Martinez, not too shabby either. A smaller sample size, 86 games instead of 153. But Victor Martinez against the Indians in 86 games, it's 330. 52 runs scored, 28 doubles, 12 home runs, and 64 driven in.
Right.
In 86 games. So those two guys are obviously crucial for the Tigers' batting order. And again, they're going to face an extraordinary challenge in the three starters the Indians are about to throw at them.
Well, and that's part of what the Tigers, in theory, on paper, strength is supposed to be, specifically the middle part of that order. I'm not obviously going to count J.D. Martinez in this because of his injury, but let's see, stat lines for the year, and this is the usual middle of the order in no particular order for the Tigers. You got Miggy at 301, 1644. Nick Castellanos, who one could argue is having a breakout season that Tigers fans have been waiting for the last couple of years, 300. 1340. You got Victor.
Although he's cooled off.
He's cooled off a bit, that there's no question. But so far, he feels like he still has turned that corner that I know Tigers fans have been waiting about 2 years for. Victor's at 327, 1228. And Ian Kinsler, he's the only one not at 300, but it's 298, 1446. So all four of those guys, and obviously the numbers would even be better with J.D. Martinez if we could include him, but he's obviously not playing, so we won't. Just those four right there, it's a strength versus strength thing when it comes to both of these teams.
Oh, no question about it. And it's going to be a very, very fun series. And you take a look at the standings. We ran through them a moment ago, but the Indians are in first, 11 games over 500 at 41-30. The Royals sitting three games back at 38-33. And then there are the Tigers at 38-35, so four games back, essentially. A sweep, of course, would be amazing for the Tigers to push toward the division lead, but I don't see the Indians sweeping the Tigers, and I don't see the Tigers sweeping the Indians. It's probably going to be a 2-1 three-game series, and either way, that's only a game pickup by the Tigers or a game extended lead by the Indians. So we can't call it, boy, this is a must-win thing, but I'll tell you what, for establishing your brand in the division, steamrolling toward the All-Star break, heading toward, you know, the trading deadline at the end of next month, and just kind of saying this is who we are as we head into the second half of the season. From an establishment of your brand in the division standpoint, it's big in that regard. The Indians want to continue their dominance over the Tigers, who have not beaten them yet this season, and the Tigers want to say, you know what, that early season crap is just that. It's crap. We didn't have it figured out then. People were calling for our manager to be fired. We rallied. We came together. We put it together offensively. We fixed some of our bullpen woes. We got some more consistent pitching. And, yeah, bring it on now, Tribe. So that's, you know, it's kind of a not a standings and division championship big series because it's only June 24th, but it's an ego big series. As each team tries to kind of prove a point to the other one.
Yeah, no question. Incidentally, for those who want a scoreboard watch over the weekend, that second-place team sandwich between the Royals, they're hosting the Astros in a rematch of that playoff series. Astros not having, you know, as good of a season, obviously, right now. So that's something, obviously, you know keep an eye on. And when it comes to division, you know, this is why – And I kind of agree with you. Since it's still late June, it's bigger than an April series, but it's not, you know, must win, I think, for either. Though I think it from the Tigers' point of view, they need it a little bit more at this moment than the Indians would, just because of the domination.
Times, right? They're going to play 13 more. They play
That's
six.
Kind of the other part that I was going to get to, which is you still...
10 more after this series.
Right. And because of the unbalanced scheduling in Major League Baseball with the heavy emphasis on division opponents, Indians have the best record against division opponents in the Central. That's usually the case for the team that finishes first. Tigers are right now basically a 500 team within the division. And as we know, I would argue baseball is now the most important sport to win your division in. Second would be football in the NFL because you at least get a home game, if not a bye. But in baseball, you win the division, you don't have to deal with that silly one-game playoff thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So and again, it's way too early to be talking about that part. But like I said, There is a confidence thing. There is an establishment of your brand. We are the beast of this division. You know what? We own you. Even if the Indians take two out of three, they sit there and say, we're 8-1 against you. You know, if the Tigers do it, you know, they can very simply say, yeah, well, guess what? It's a new season now. A, that early stuff doesn't matter. B, we get you 10 more times after this. So there is something to be said for just kind of stare down series where they're looking at one another to see, all right, where are we really, and to see who blinks. So, all right, we're going to take a time out here because we want to get to Zach Meisel and Anthony Fenech on time. It's going to be very cool. An Indians rider and a Tigers rider joining. They each join us separately most weeks during the baseball season. Now they're going to be in the same press box up at Comerica, so we are going to talk to them together. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hey, before we take the time out, though, want to remind you that the weekend is here, and this is your last opportunity over the weekend, obviously, to get your bids in on great products and services provided by so many of our wonderful clients and business partners, and they're offering you a chance to bid on these auction style so that you can save so much money on the actual retail costs of these items and services. We're talking about paying pennies on the dollar at My Toledo Auction. Where do you find it? You find it online at 1065theticket.com. All you have to do is register at 1065theticket.com, and you can bid on these items. And again, just kind of keep your eyes open, follow it over the weekend, see where it is, see what you think your top price is, and keep bidding. The bidding closes at 11 a.m. on Sunday. 11 a.m. on Sunday. And if you don't know what we're talking about, let me give a couple of ideas. How about automotive items? There's a $500 gift certificate to Car Stereo 1. Right now, the current bid on that is just $200. By the time that thing is done, you know, it may be at $350, and you're getting essentially $150 for free. Fun and entertainment packages, concert event packages are there for you as well. For a full calendar year, home and garden. If you put home and garden together, you get harm. How about that? $5,000 HVAC gift certificate to Wojo's Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Current bid on that is $2,000. So, again, you're going to pay pennies on the dollar. You need a new riding mower, but you just couldn't afford it. You might be able to now. Snapper, rear-engine riding mower. Current bid on that is just $700. Telling you, keep bidding. Play it right. You could end up with some great items or gift cards or merchandise or services for pennies on the dollar. So it's all online at My Toledo Auction, which is at 1065theticket.com. Bidding ends on Monday at 11 a.m. All right, we'll get that bottom of the hour Sports Center now. Come back, talk more Tigers and Indians, or Indians and Tigers, depending on how you look at it. If you're a Tigers fan, you're looking to this as an opportunity. If you're an Indians fan, you want to just stomp on this this ant with a sledgehammer. You're 6-0 against them thus far, and you want to keep it going. We'll talk to Meisel and Fennec together next on ESPN.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
This is swinging a fly ball right center field. This one's deep. Gutierrez is on the run. He won't be able to get that one off the wall. Rounding third, heading home is Upton, and Moya will cruise into second with a back-to-back RBI double. 2-0 Tigers here in the second.
Well, another off-speed pitch, and boy, we're watching a young man that has made some terrific changes the other times he's been up.
The 1-2. Fly ball left field. This one's deep. Got some carry to it, and it's gone, a home run. James McCann with a big two-run home run. The 1-0 pitch. In the dirt. He gets by the catcher, Iannetta. Maven scores. Tigers win.
They won four in a row. They swept the Seattle Mariners, and they are coming into this home series against the Cleveland Indians tonight on a roll. But the Indians are straight up hotter, the hottest team in baseball, arguably. Six straight wins, two straight sweeps over the White Sox and then the Rays, 11 straight wins at home at Progressive Field as they head out onto the road for the first of a 10-game road trip. But they also just finished the first undefeated home month that they've had in some time. I don't know what that sometime is, and that's why we have our experts on to fill in the missing pieces of the puzzle. And when I say experts, each and every week, we are very fortunate enough to have a couple of guys from the two teams we cover the most right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, Zach Meisel, covers the Indians, among other sports, for the Northeast Ohio Media Group, Cleveland Plain Dealer, and Cleveland.com. Anthony Fennec covers the Tigers, obviously, for the Detroit Free Press on their beat. We talk to them individually almost every week. We're very lucky to be able to do so. But finally, they come together because they are in the same building at Comerica Park for the start of this relatively big mid to late June series between these two clubs. And we've got Zach Meisel with us. First of all, Zach, how you doing? Good, sir?
I'm good. It's going to be hard to keep a straight face during this interview, I'll tell you that much.
Well, before we started, could you do me a favor and go wake up Anthony Fennec? Because from what I understand, he has a propensity to fall asleep in press boxes. Can you wake him up for us so we can get started?
I'll give him a little shake really quick, yeah.
Anthony Fennec joining us as well. Anthony, how you doing, brother?
I'm barely awake here until Zach just woke me up.
You guys have been just so much fun to talk to throughout the last couple
of seasons. Sitting in the back of the press box right now. He's across the table from you. We're kind of like a...
I asked Kushlin when he got you guys on the line. I said, are they together? Are they in the same room or in separate booths or something? He said, I don't know. I didn't ask. I figured I better ask because that's the fun of this. You guys have been awesome, like I said, the last couple of seasons since we started this show. And, Zach, you've been with me a lot, and Anthony's been with me weekly during the baseball season. Some of the stories you guys began to tell about one another started to take over the baseball conversation, which is why we really wanted to hook this up. So as I understand it right now, Meisel should be on his fourth ice cream cone or bowl, and Fennec should be asleep. Do I have it right?
Yes, and Zach's a big fan of white pants. So I wore some white pants today. I'll have to tweet it at you guys.
You're going to have to help me out here. Wait a minute. Wait. White pants? What are we talking about?
He just likes white pants.
White, like white sweatpants? White.
Any kind of white pants. He's a big. He likes white.
You're gonna have to snap that pic. You definitely have to snap that and tweet it to us, and so we can have a look.
I will.
Zach, you're gonna have to help me out because I'm picturing John Travolta. I'm picturing Saturday Night Fever white disco pants. Are they flared?
He's pulling them off. I'll give you that much. Now he's dancing in the press box, and this is already out of hand. 2 minutes in.
Is this the first time you guys have ever done something like this?
Well, with you two guys.
Okay.
First time I've ever done like this with you two guys, because you guys are good sports, so we can have some fun. All right, we'll do more of the personal conversation in a minute, but let's talk baseball. Zach, you didn't write it, but one of your colleagues at the Free Press today, I was reading just a little report, Brad Ausmus wants his guys to bring some anger into this series because of being 0-6, and not just being 0-6, but being essentially dominated six times by the Cleveland Indians. Do you get that sense? You know, I tried to describe this to Kushlin 10 minutes ago. It's not big in terms of division championship big because it's June 24th. It's not, you know, September 24th. But it's big from we're establishing our brand in this division for the second half or headed toward the second half. You know, the Indians have dominated the Tigers, and if they can do it again this weekend, it really goes a long way toward just the, you know, the confidence factor in the division. And if the Tigers can do something here, they can easily say, you know what, that early season crap matters not. And we got you 10 more times after this series. You know, we've got you now. So is that the sense that Ausmus is talking about? He wants his guys to get mad and really make a statement here in the middle of, I guess it's midseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that was definitely a talking point inside the Tigers clubhouse. I don't know how much that registers with the guys, but I mean, obviously they don't like getting beat. They don't like losing to a team in the division. But you know, talking to a couple of the veterans after yesterday's game, looking ahead to the series, they were kind of, you know, downplaying that whole revenge, so to speak, angle. But I agree with you. I think it's a big series. If only for the fact that I think the Tigers and the Indians right now are shaping up as the two best teams in the division. The Indians just got something going about them, and I think Zach can tell you that in a minute. But they just seem like they got that, like, they just got that kind of, like, flair this year with, like, you know, Lindor and Jose Ramirez and the helmet flying off, all that stuff. But, yeah, I think they're the two best teams in the division right now. I mean, I think the Royals are good, too, though.
Before I go to Zach, you're glossing right over the Royals, the defending world champions who are in between these
two
teams?
I don't want to do that. But I think that right now the Indians look like they're the best team in the division. Then maybe the Tigers and Royals are kind of like 2A, 2B.
Okay, that's fair enough. Zach, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily a revenge thing because, you know, it's June 24th and it's only six times out of 19 that they've played. But like I was saying, you know, Ausmus is kind of saying we're very well aware that we're 0-6 against them and they beat the crap out of us on the mound, in the box, everywhere. And we need to make a statement here. It's not a revenge thing as much as we need to let these guys know that we are for real and they do not own us.
Yeah, but the Indians can feel that way too because Detroit has owned them the last few years. And the thing that, I mean, you can ask Indians players, you can ask Terry Francona this. I'm sure Anthony will ask Francona if this is a big series coming up in a little bit, but they take every game as its own entity and they're not looking ahead. They're not looking at, you know, when they play Kansas City next or what their record is against the AL Central or anything like that. They really do treat it day by day, and it's so cliche to say, but I do think that's why this team has had some of the success it has, because they're not worried about the fact that they've won six straight, that they're just absolutely rolling in June, because none of that means anything if they go out and lose tonight. So I kind of think they look at this thing with a smaller lens, and because of that, that's kind of where they are now and why they're not necessarily thinking about other teams' motivations.
As I watch this team from a relative distance, and not nearly as close as I once did, obviously being up there in the box with you for a long time, Zach, I see what Anthony's talking about. He said flair. You know, we're looking for a word to describe, you know, I don't know if it's swagger, but the way this team plays, the way they enjoy every game, the way they treat every game, like he said, the helmets flying, it reminds me of division championship type of Indians teams from years gone by. I don't know how to describe it, though. I don't know if flair is the right word or if there is just one word. How would you describe the way that team approaches it? You know, you said day by day, and they really do. Each game's its own entity. But they really seem to have a, you know, something to them that maybe other teams don't have right now.
It's definitely a mojo, a quiet confidence. the thing about the 90s, what made those teams so successful, so dangerous, so intimidating is that they'll even tell you, they stepped on the field knowing they were going to win, and they weren't shy about boasting that confidence. And this team, it's certainly not comparable to teams that were stacked with Albert Bell and Manny Ramirez or anything like that, but they do have this quiet confidence to them, and it starts with the pitching staff because they have the best rotation in the American League, and they know that all they have to do is score four runs, and they're probably going to beat you. So they have confidence in that regard. They're very aggressive on the bases. They've been going first to third a lot, scoring on doubles from first, singles from second, stuff like that. They steal a lot of bases, and that's, you know, the kind of the attitude. Rajay Davis says, I'm faster than you. You're going to have to be perfect in how you execute holding runners and throwing to the plate and throwing to second base, or I'm going to steal on you every time. It's that kind of mojo that's working. And when you start winning some games, and when you remember, this team was supposed to do this last year and the year before, and they fell short. So I think finally to see some progress and to see really the fruits of their labor pay off, it builds and it grows, and they've got more confidence, and the more you win, the more that kind of breeds itself, and you're seeing that right now.
We're kind of in the middle of an American League Central roundtable right here on the Extravaganza. Bob France, Jim Cushlin is here as well, and right from the America Park press box, we have Zach Meisel, you just heard from, who covers the Indians and more in Cleveland for the Plain Dealer. Anthony Fennick, of course, covers the Tigers. He's on their beat for the Detroit Free Press, so we're having a bit of a mini panel discussion here. Anthony, that rotation that Zach just spoke of is the best in the American League statistically. They do lead in team ERA and the starters ERA and much more. I was telling Jim before, you know, there's no easy way to get this rotation for the Tigers. What I mean by that is, you know, I'm looking at it, that Salazar and Carrasco and Tomlin, and I'm thinking, boy, it's a good thing they didn't have Kluber, or boy, it's a good thing they didn't have to face Bauer. There's really, it doesn't matter at what point you face this team right now, the way every starter is pitching. You could face the 1-2-3 in the rotation or the 3-4-5. It doesn't really get easy for this Tigers lineup the way the Indians are throwing.
No, but I think, you know, in two of these three games, you know, they're going to have Jordan Zimmermann and Justin Verlander, and I think those guys can match up with, you know, whoever in the Indians rotation. But I agree with you, top to bottom, 1-5. The Indians have a much better rotation. I would agree with Zach. They have the best rotation in the American League. The Tigers just got to figure out the back end of their bullpen right now, because they're kind of going through, you know, Brad Austin didn't want to call it an audition process, but, you know, Daniel Norris started yesterday. He's got some good stuff, and he showed some good stuff. I know he allowed three solo home runs, but it looks like he's going to get another turn in the rotation. So it's kind of, to me, coming down to Aníbal Sanchez and Mike Pelfrey, whoever pitches better in there. And their start, Sanchez is pitching on Saturday, which is a bit of a concern going up against this Angels or Indians lineup right now. And then Mike Pelfrey's pitching on Tuesday, so I feel like, you know, they could go with a 6-man throughout the All-Star break. I don't think that's going to be the case. Eventually, they're going to have to make a decision. And I think that they're a better team with Sanchez in the rotation. Hopefully, this stint in the bullpen helped them out, and Pelfrey in long relief. But even with these young guys like Norris and Boyd, they still. They really don't have the potential to have like a rotation like Cleveland's right now.
Hey guys, let's remove ourselves from this particular matchup and these two teams for a moment, just to talk about.
I do have to say, I agree with what Zach said about like the Indians' mojo. It's just something. It's almost like a team of destiny kind of feel a little bit. And I know that's like kind of like heavy kind of, you know, words to put on, but that's just like the feeling I get. Like almost like it was an ice cream and it was melting away. That's like the confidence they've had this year.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And I don't think there's a wrong word for it. You know, mojo, you said flair, I said swagger. I don't know what it is, but you're right. A team of destiny, it might sound a little heavy, but they play that way. They play like it's all going to work out. They don't seem to panic. And that's kind of, like I said, watching it from a bit of a distance as I do now. But guys, just separating ourselves from this series for a minute, and both of you can answer this or either of you, just talking about pitching. I'm looking at the stats, obviously, and we know the Indians have the best ERA in the American League, and I wanted to see where that ranked in the in MLB. What an unbelievable pitching-dominated league the National League is. The top five teams, the Indians are only sixth in baseball, first in the American League. The top five are from the National League. And the ERAs are just insane, as are the individual performances of the best pitchers in baseball in the National League, like Clayton Kershaw and Cueto and Arrieta and Greinke and Strasburg and Scherzer. And on down the line we go. how, I mean, what do you make of the way the National League has just, I don't know if you want to say dominated the sport from a pitching standpoint, but again, the best in the American League is good enough for only sixth in the majors.
Well, what the Cubs have done so far is just on another planet, their pitching staff. I will say, just briefly touching on the Indians here, because they had Michael Clevinger and Cody Anderson in the rotation for a few weeks, and both just put up brutal numbers. And now that they have the five that I anticipate lasting the rest of the season in the rotation and really carrying this roster, it'll be interesting to see how much better those numbers get, because I think the five combined have a 3.20 ERA this year, and they've been pitching better the last couple of weeks than they were in April and May. So it'll be interesting to watch. But, of course, the National League, you are going to have a little bit of an advantage because you're facing a pitcher every ninth time through that order. But it's what the Cubs have, what the Dodgers, I mean, they have the best pitchers in baseball. And so some of the rotations just follow suit, and we're seeing that now. I mean, they have, if you look at the records, they've got, I think, three or four of the top five records in baseball, too, and that's not an accident.
Yeah, and the Cubs, I mean, the Cubs team ERA, just to, for perspective, is about a half run less than the second-place Mets. You know, they're at 2.76, just for those who don't know. And then it goes Mets 3.19, Dodgers 3.32, Nationals 3.33, Giants 3.39, and the Indians have a 3.57 ERA, the first from the American League to show up there. The Tigers, for anybody who's keeping score at home, the Tigers are at number 23, so obviously bottom third. But what the Cubs are doing, like you said, is astronomical. The pitching thing, though, not facing a DH and facing a pitcher, can't account for that. You know, not fully anyway, Zach, obviously. It's just too much dominance, and I'm just trying to figure out how the trends go, I guess, where you know, one league can be so dominant on the mound the way, and looking at the individual numbers of Kershaw, 157, and Arrieta, 174, and Bumgarner, also at 185. It's just hard to fathom, and I don't know if this is just something that teams and leagues go through as far as a trend or what it is. Thoughts on that, Anthony Fenech?
I kind of agree with Zach in terms of, and now me and Zach have been removed. I have to walk down to the clubhouse right now, so he's still in the press box. I'm walking down the stairs.
Oh, but, okay.
I agree with what Zach's saying in terms of, like, the DH. I mean, like I said, the guys in the National League are facing a pitcher, and the guys in the American League are facing a DH who is a good hitter. I mean, it's not, you know, a lot of the DHs, like Victor Martinez, David Ortiz, those guys are middle of the order kind of bad. So I think it's that, but I also think something that has to do with the best records is I think that some of the worst teams in baseball are in the National League, not the American League. I see a lot of parity in the American League. There's only a couple teams that really stand out, like Texas is one of them. But in the National League, you got some of these teams that are fattening up on teams like the Padres and the Phillies and the Reds, the Brewers, just really bad teams. And I think that that has something to do with it, too. But I think the main factor in terms of the low ERAs is the DH.
Yeah, that's not a bad look at it, too. That is certainly another factor, and obviously there's plenty of time to evaluate the rest of those things from the league standpoint, but since we only have a couple of minutes left with you guys, and I know you got to go talk to Brad Ausmus, we'll wrap this up just by talking about this series. I don't think the Indians are going to sweep the Tigers up in Comerica, and I don't think that the Tigers are going to do the Indians. So at the end of the day, this quote-unquote big series, you know, between the, you know, two of the top three teams in the American League Central is only going to probably be a one-game swing, either an extension by a game by the Indians or closing it by one game for the Tigers. So from a standing standpoint, it's not that big. Is it just big because of the rivalry? And Zach, you said it before, the Tigers have flat out owned the Indians for the last several years, and now that worm has kind of turned a little bit. Is it just big from that standpoint?
Yeah, and it's certainly big when you look at it from the Indian standpoint. They're starting a 10-game road swing here, and they'll go to Atlanta, and that's a chance to fatten up that record too and pad your lead. Then they go to Toronto for four, which isn't too easy. But basically, you just want to come away with this. Last road trip, they split four in Seattle, took 2 of 3 from Anaheim. And basically, if they would have just won a game in Kansas City, you would have been 5-5, and you would have been pretty happy with that road trip staying in first place. And instead, they got swept. And I think they have a little bit of motivation here to make sure the same thing doesn't happen and to come away with a road trip on a good note, knowing how well they've played at home. They've won 11 straight games at home. So it's a chance. I mean, they seem like they see another American League Central team on the schedule and they just start salivating this year. And it'll be interesting to see how they come out because I keep waiting for the offense to kind of shrivel up without Michael Brantley. It's amazing that they've produced the way they have, and they've probably scored more runs than they should just because of really good base running, timely hitting, and that stuff doesn't always last. So it'll be interesting to see if they can keep that up, knowing that they've got to make some
additions. You stole my final question for you, which is about Brantley. So let me go to Anthony so he can get to cover Brad Ausmus down there in the clubhouse in the manager's office. But it's Zimmerman and Salazar tonight, by the way. Great matchup. The best two pitchers on each team, at least for the first half of the season. Who do you see winning tonight, first of all, Anthony Fenech?
Jesus, go with the Tigers. I think they're going to win the series. I don't think it'll be a sweep. I think it's going to be a good series. You got two teams that are playing really good baseball. Like I said, that's the biggest thing right now is they're both playing good. They both have some momentum. I think the Tigers have really been kind of settling in a little bit. Their bullpen's gotten better. Obviously, you know about all the big name guys, and it hurts on having JD Martinez, but they have enough offense to go around. They're starting to hit the ball more. Justin Upton's really looked good in June, so I'm going to take the Tigers in this series tonight. Tonight I'll go with the Tigers too. I'm gonna go with the guys wearing the white pants tonight.
Four game streak for the Tigers. Obviously, the Indians are on a 6-game winning streak. In 30 seconds, Anthony, and I know we're still 5 weeks from the trading deadline, but name a position if they go buying and go shopping. What are they going to target? Is it going to be bullpen?
Yeah, I think it's going to be bullpen. I'm leaning towards a lefty reliever at this point or a starter, but I don't think they're going to do anything big because they're kind of strapped payroll-wise, and they don't really want to part with their young prospects. So I would say either bullpen or starting pitching because I think they're pretty well-set positionally.
Good stuff. Anthony, if you've got a drop because you've got to go into the clubhouse or the manager's office, go ahead and do that as we listen to Zach wrap it up. Zach, 5 weeks in, or excuse me, away from the trading deadline, I talked about this to Jim yesterday. You know, if they just know they're going to get Brantley back healthy by the end of July, they don't need to trade to add an all-star silver slugger award-winning bat. They don't need to trade at all. They just got to let Michael Brantley get back onto the field. Do you think they will be willing to part with prospects or anything else to buy? Or are they just going to wait for Michael to come back?
No, I don't think you can wait for Brantley to come back. I don't think they have any idea when he will come back. It seems like there's been setback after setback. And you look at it, they've gotten off to such a slow start each of the last couple of years. And they've been playing from behind. They've been playing catch up. And they get to this point in July where they can't justify being buyers and mortgaging any of their future or adding payroll because they just have too much ground to make up. And that isn't the case this year if things hold the way they are for the next month or so. They're in a position where they're playing from ahead. They're looking to add, put the team over the top. And you can't guarantee that you're going to be in this spot a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. They do have some big-time prospects in the outfield that are coming at some point in the next year or two, but you don't know how they'll pan out. You don't know when exactly they'll be ready. So if I'm the Indians, I'm making my move now. I'm going and adding an outfielder. I'm adding a reliever or two, especially one from the left side. And I'm being aggressive, and look, I don't know that this will mean anything, but you see the way this team or this city embraced the Cavs after they won a championship. You saw what it meant to the fans in the city and 1.3 million people trekking downtown just to be a part of it. It should mean something to ownership to say, hey, this city does embrace winners, and we've got to make sure we do everything in our power to supply the team with another winner, even if that means adding a little more payroll than we're comfortable with. And so it'll be interesting. I know the front office wants to be aggressive. There are plenty of outfielders and relievers out there that they can add. It's just a matter of what will they spend prospects-wise and what will they be allowed to add financially.
And I feel like they would indeed be allowed to spend it financially. It's just a matter of how much are you willing to spend prospect-wise, obviously. And that's always the key when you have a franchise like this, that if you lose prospects, you can't exactly buy them back later on. Guys,
hey, they were getting some good crowds there last week in this last homestand.
Oh yeah, and like Zach said, they'll embrace a winner. I mean, you put a winning team on the field, the fans will come out. It's just, you know, it's always kind of chicken and the egg there. Sometimes it's the fans don't come out and spend money, and the owners are like, how am I supposed to buy guys? You guys aren't spending money. And then the fans are like, wait a minute, why should I spend money when you don't have good guys on the field? It's, you know, it's that catch-22, vicious circle, whatever you want to call it. Hey guys,
yeah, I agree with Zach. It's like, you know, they've had a lot of ice cream. They want more ice cream. So this is fun, though. This has been fun.
And by the way, I think I may have totally misunderstood the beginning part of our conversation when you talked about the white pants. You meant the players.
The players.
I thought you were saying Zach Meisel was wearing white pants, and I was trying to figure out what in the heck you were talking about.
Anthony Fenech is wearing white pants today in honor of Zach Meisel, who likes white pants.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you, guys. Hey, guys, you guys are so much fun. I appreciate always when you join us individually, and thanks for spending the time with us together. Have a great game. Wake him up around the 7th or so we can finish it. Okay, Zach?
You got it.
All right, thanks, guys. Enjoy it.
See you guys.
Have a good one. There you go. All right, we're late, and I told Jim Cushlin I would not be late this time, and I was. Let's get out now. Sports Radio, ESPN 106.5.
There's a swing and a fly ball right center field. This one's deep. Gutierrez is on the run. He won't be able to get that one off the wall. Rounding third, heading home is Upton, and Moya will cruise into second with a back-to-back RBI double. 2-0 Tigers here in the second.
Well, another off-speed pitch, and boy, we're watching a young man that has made some terrific changes the other times he's been up.
The 1-2. Fly ball left field. This one's deep. Got some carry to it, and it's gone, a home run. James McCann with a big two-run home run. The 1-0 pitch. In the dirt. He gets by the catcher, Iannetta. Maven scores. Tigers win.
When we play whoever we're supposed to. And part of that streak was like 3 weeks ago. So it's like, you know what I mean? Just think we just, if we play good, we give ourselves a chance. And if we don't, we give the other team a better chance.
With the first pick, the Philadelphia 76ers select Ben Simmons from Melbourne, Australia, and Louisiana State University. With the second pick, the Los Angeles Lakers select Brandon Ingram from Duke University.
Here we go.
With the third pick, the Boston Celtics select Jaylen Brown from the University of California, Berkeley. The Phoenix Suns select Dragan Bender from Croatia. He last played for Maccabi Tel Aviv. With the fifth pick, the Minnesota Timberwolves select Chris Dunn from Providence College. The Chicago Bulls select Denzel Valentine from Michigan State University.
Pistons
pick. The 18th pick in the 2016 NBA draft, the Detroit Pistons select Henry Ellenson from Marquette University. With the 20th pick, the Indiana Pacers select Caris LeVert from the University of Michigan.
With the 31st pick, Deontay Davis from Michigan State University.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed an extravaganza, and it rolls into hour number two at 4:13 on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. 866-240-1065. We had a lot of really great conversations. One long conversation with Zach Meisel and Anthony Fenech last hour, which means we didn't have much time for you. I'd like to make time for you in this final hour of the program and final hour of the work week for the extravaganza. Maybe you're already on your way home. You've punched out for the week at 4 o'clock. If you are and you're in your car, dial us up if you're at home, wherever it might be. 866-240-1065. You want to talk about the draft? You can talk about the draft last night. You want to talk about the series coming up at Comerica tonight? It's going to be fun. Indians and Tigers going head-to-head. You know, Jim, I got to think back, actually. I'm trying to remember, and I don't have every season obviously memorized, especially at any given point, but when is the last time that both the Indians and the Tigers were solid as rocks in contending for a division title after June 1st? And the reason I ask is because, like, you know, the Indians were, of course, not expected, but, you know, Sports Illustrated said they'd win the World Series, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And it turned out to be a very disappointing season for them. The Tigers were expected to be contending for it as well, and it was a terrible season for them. And you go back to, you know, 2014, and I'm trying to remember the Tigers. I know the Indians did not finish well. I'm just trying to remember when the last time both teams are kind of like, here it is late June, approaching the All-Star break. You know, because for far too many seasons, obviously the Indian seasons were over by June, you know, with terrible Aprils and Mays. But the Indians are rolling at 6 in a row, as we pointed out, 11 straight at home, as they now take the road for this 10-game road trip starting in Detroit. The Tigers are 4 in a row in the sweep over the Mariners.
Right.
Both teams are starting to come into their own in terms of production. because the Indians, even without Michael Brantley, are scoring far more runs. You wanted to talk about this earlier than really anybody expected. Even Zach Meisel said, you know, we're kind of waiting for the offense to start to shrivel up because they're not supposed to be this good. And the Tigers were supposed to be this good offensively, but just weren't getting all of the production they needed from certain guys, including Justin Upton, who is an extraordinarily expensive addition in the offseason. Even Miguel Cabrera for the first month or so was very down. And now, of course, J.D. Martinez is injured. And so, you know, but yet they're still scoring runs. So, you know, you got both of these teams pitching very, very well. The Indians are pitching better than anybody else in the American League. The Tigers, with the exception of trying to figure out, you know, they got to go to Anibal Sanchez tomorrow. But, you know, with Zimmerman obviously doing his thing, you know, it's kind of like best of times and worst of times when you look at Fulmer and Pelfrey. You know, you got a tremendous performance and then a oh my gosh performance. You got
right.
You got Verlander, who's kind of, you know, up and down, I guess, but he's more up than down with his ERA being under four at around 3.75. But they can still pitch and they can still beat pretty much almost anybody in any given series because of their pitching, at least at the starting rotation. So this is just, I don't want to say it's a rarity, but I'm just kind of trying to figure out when the last time a series like this in the middle of the summer, you know, either at the All-Star break or beyond it, you know, that a series like this was this entertaining.
You know, and that's actually the thing. You are correct when we're talking about Indians and Tigers both being good and therefore having important series from late June on is in fact a rarity. In fact, looking back on it, there's only really been four seasons in all of both of teams' histories that this dynamic is in play. The closest would have been the most recent, I should say, would have been 2013, that they separated by a game. But let's not forget, the Indians won 10 in a row to win the wild card spot after the Tigers had already clinched earlier.
That was in 13.
That was in 2013, was separated by one game. You could try to stretch 2007. The Tigers were the only other solid team in the Central, but that ended up being an eight-game spread. And honestly, the only other two times in history were, from the Cleveland side of thing, infamous years. 1940, they got separated by a game for the pennant because, you know, that was back in the days where there were no divisions. You won the standings, you went straight to the World Series. Tigers beat out the Indians in 1940 by a game. And 108 years ago, Cubs' infamous 1908 season, the Tigers with Ty Cobb beat the Napoleon Lajoie Naps, they would have been called back then, by just a half game. Those are the only four times where Detroit and Cleveland have been truly in contention at the same time in both teams' histories.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. And this could be something we see repeatedly the rest of the season. I mean, I don't expect either team to fall off, and I don't think either team is going to pull away from either one another or from the Royals.
I agree with that completely. All three of these teams are, if there's any team that's not going to be in the conversation come September, it may be the White Sox if they keep trending downwards.
I think they're already on the way out of the conversation.
I mean, they go and make a, in theory, big move for James Shields, and it's currently blowing up in their faces.
And you know, here's the dichotomy about that. You know, hey, we're adding a big game pitcher, big game James, to be precise. And like 2 weeks later, what were the headlines yesterday and Wednesday and Tuesday? Will the White Sox trade Chris Sale? You add a big game pitcher, now you're going to trade your best pitcher because you are going to be out of it. You're going to be sellers. And, you know, they're not sure if they're going to be able to re-sign him. So
the White Sox are that perfect example of why you do not pay attention to the standings until either 40 games or Memorial Day weekend. Take your pick.
Exactly right. Because as hot as they started, they had the second best record in baseball behind whom?
Behind the Cubs.
The other Chicago team.
Because I remember the stories as we cross from April into May that is this going to be an all Chicago year?
So given that, as an example, let's look at this series because this team hasn't played since early May. These two teams haven't played since early May. It was May 5th at Progressive Field the last time they played. The Indians had that 6-0 advantage. They have swept them twice last time at Progressive Field. And here are just some of the numbers. But again, these are you know, the first series was at Comerica April 22nd to the 24th, then May 3rd to the 5th at Progressive Field. And obviously 6-0 for the Indians, but they're very different teams now in a number of ways. The first consecutive series sweeps the Indians have had, by the way, against Detroit since 2008. When we talk about dominance in this series, it has been the other way around in the last several years, and that is Detroit just completely dominating the Indians. The Indians' first series sweep of 3-plus at Comerica since August 25th to the 27th in 2008. The Indians have not finished a season above the 500 mark against Detroit since 2012, and they were 10-8 then. So just, you know, there's no doubt that Detroit has had the better of the series, and even though the Indians have had the better of this matchup thus far this year, again, we're talking April and May, very early May, May 5th, and this is not the same. These are not the same two teams. Now, you could argue that is a problem for Detroit more than it is Cleveland, because when we say these two teams aren't the same as they were then, quite honestly, the Indians, from a pitching standpoint, have gotten better. Cody Anderson was in the rotation then. You know, obviously Trevor Bauer has now moved into that. Carlos Carrasco got hurt shortly after those series, and then he's had to come back. But if you look at where the Indians' starting pitching has gone from then to now, they've actually gotten better. Now, fortunately for Detroit, I think they have too, because we talked about Upton coming around. We talked about some of the other production from guys they were waiting for that they are getting now. Obviously, you know, the pitching situation has changed a little bit too. Jordan Zimmermann was untouchable for a month, and now he's still very, very good. And his ERA is, what did we say, 3.5 going into tonight?
Mm-hmm.
3.24, not even 3.5, 3.25. But he was untouchable then. So they're two different teams from then to now, but it might be actually that the Indians have actually gotten a little bit better.
Yeah, and that starts again for the Indians with the pitching thing. And yeah, you know, I decided as you were saying this to bring this up, because again, as we mentioned, in a way, it's not just the Indians v. Tigers this weekend, although that's why we're doing a little extra special, like the round table last segment before the top of the hour with Zach and Anthony. But it's always the way baseball is, Bob. It's your division record, your record with in the division, because the schedules are so unbalanced. And this actually, to me, gives it to be more evidence that this is a bigger, it's not earth-shattering, but it's still, I think, a bigger series from a Tigers' point of view at this moment than it is the Indians. And I submit to you these records against the Central Division. Indians have the best record against their own division at 21-10. Tigers are only 12-13. Incidentally, the Royals are 21-11. Those are other barometers to look at, again, because divisional opponents in baseball play each other so much.
Sure, sure. 19 times each, roughly. So,
it's like half the schedule, basically.
By the way, just one more thing on trends or streaks or whatever, as you go into this series, this very interesting series that I think everybody, whether you're a Tigers fan or an Indians fan, would agree is big from, again, a we're establishing who we are standpoint more than this is for a division championship or near a division
championship. Those series will come in September.
Exactly. And maybe August. You know, they may come in August because one team might be on the verge of collapsing and falling out of it, not even making September relevant. And the other one, you know, might on the verge of pushing it through.
But, a lot of baseball left. That's part of the story with that game.
But just to point this out, it's not just the six straight that the Indians have won against Detroit that make this very interesting. The Indians are 11-2 in their last 13 against Detroit. That's downright tiger-like dominant against the Indians in 2015, 14.
I was going to say, and that stretches it back to last season.
Yes, it does. Going back to June 24 of last year, the Indians have won 6 in a row and 11 of 13 against Detroit going back to June of last year. And oh, by the way, since we're, you know, looking at all of the different trends, it's not just a home thing, because the Indians have won 6 of their last 8 at Comerica, 7 of their last 12. So you're 7-5 in the Tigers' ballpark. And again, just one more note as we move on this afternoon on the extravaganza. Jordan Zimmermann has only faced the Indians lineup once, obviously being with the Nationals. Not many opportunities to face the Indians. And in that one decision, it was 2013, so 3 years ago, June 15, 2013, the Indians scored 6 runs in 5 innings off of him on 8 hits. They lost 7-6, but Jordan Zimmermann got knocked around a little bit. So it's really an interesting dynamic here. And, Jim, we focus over and over and over on the way the Indians' rotation looks and how Kluber, with his 3-hit shutout, complete game shutout the other night, followed by Bauer and his three-hit complete game. 10 strikeout against one walk performance. Salazar, we've already covered a great deal with this American League second-best 2-2-3. Carrasco down just a little over 3 in the ERA, even counting some performances that he was coming back from the DL on. And then, obviously, Trevor Bauer has just found it. But you mentioned this early on, and I said, let's hold off and talk about the bats later. Okay, let's talk about the bats right now. Without Michael Brantley, their best hitter, their most consistent hitter, this team is scoring far more runs than they should be, and they're getting it from all up and down the lineup. You know, they're getting it a little bit of power and timely hitting from Jason Kipnis, who, of course, has been an all-star. Jose Ramirez. Lonnie Chisenhall started the year on the DL, and he came in and he was hitting a miserable one-something for, you know, the first few weeks before he finally found his stroke and his groove and his health. And Lonnie Chisenhall's pushing up on 300 now.
280 on the year now.
Yeah. Carlos Santana and Mike Napoli are not high batting average guys, but both are providing power, a lot of it.
Yeah, let me stop you right there. Yeah. I mean, the mere fact that it's we're coming up on the end of June, and not once this season have we had to have the conversation of when is Carlos Santana going to get above the Mendoza line. I look at that as a victory right there, even though he's still batting on the surface, not so good, 231 right now. Yeah. And you mentioned Napoli. He's at 233, but he and Santana lead the team with 15 homers each, and Napoli's the RBI leader on this team with 49. So, as you mentioned, you expect their averages to be down, but considering, especially in Santana's case, that we've never had in this year anyway, that he's under the Mendoza line discussion, that's an improvement right there.
It is. It's still a disappointment,
sure,
because when he came up as the tremendous prospect he was when the Indians acquired him from the Dodgers
organization. Supposed to hit for power and average. Yep.
Yeah, and he was like a 265, 275 guy, yep, I think, when he first came up, and he's just never found that again.
No.
For whatever reason. And you can't say it's a lack of plate discipline, because he continues to
lead
the team in walks.
Yeah, if not right up there in all of Major League Baseball in terms of walks. And, you know, if you're amongst the league leaders in walks, I almost don't care how many times you strike out. I call that good plate discipline.
Agreed. But yet the power is still there. So, and then of course we got to talk about Francisco Lindor, who quite honestly has become, I guess I can't say it out loud in his second year. I want to say though, I mean, when you play in a league that has people like Miguel Cabrera in it and Mike Trout in it, you can't call a second year shortstop from the Indians like Francisco Lindor an MVP candidate. But I want to say that. I want to say that because, to be honest with you, the way he has played, the way he has hit, I should say, is so far above and beyond what anybody ever imagined he would. The defense has been every bit as exceptional as everybody thought that it would. He's winning games for the Indians with the bat and the glove, with power and average, with clutch hitting, with late hitting, again, with tremendous range in the field at shortstop. He's quietly become one of the best players, not just best shortstops, one of the best players in the American League.
No, I completely agree with that, and that's why he's already in the conversation amongst national baseball people. Is this guy the best shortstop in baseball? He's definitely in the debate, and you're right. It's all due to the bat. This was the part that wasn't as expected. In fact, to be honest with you, Bob, the way many people were describing his defense and lack of hitting as he came through the Indian system, I kept thinking, okay, so we're basically talking an Omar Vizquel type. Improved his hitting to his credit over his career, but you know, he was always that light hitting shortstop, but he would field everything.
Well,
that's
not only
the way
that,
I was expecting
that,
Lindor.
But not only that, Omar Vizquel was completely underrated as a hitter. First of all, he finished just a few shy of 3,000 for his career.
That's a testament to longevity, but still.
Indeed, but still, it doesn't matter. And second of all, it wasn't just the fact that he was a light hitter. I mean, it wasn't like that was a negative thing, because it was when he got his light hits.
Right.
You needed a base knock in the eighth inning or ninth inning of a tie game or a one-run deficit with a guy in second base, and Omar Vizquel comes to the plate. It wasn't like you're like, oh, man, here we go. We're going to come up short. It wasn't like they were waiting for Albert Bell to get to the plate or Manny.
Right.
Or, well, I guess they were, because these were the best hitters in baseball. But when he came to the plate, you felt like, here we go, it's magic time. He hit the ball as a contact hitter, I don't want to say as well as Tony Gwynn, nobody did, or Ichiro Suzuki, nobody does, but it was that kind of a feeling, like he's going to put it in play.
Yeah.
He's either going to bounce one back up the middle, or he's going to yank one down the line. It's not going to go far, but it's going to drop, and it's going to be a base knock. Omar Vizquel's penchant for clutch hitting made him so much more than just a great glove, but no bat or light banjo hitting kind of a guy.
Yeah.
Lindor has gone far beyond that because of the power he has shown in a season and a half, not even a season and a half, because he only played about a little over half the season
last year. It's barely a full season if you add up all the at-bats. And what the surprise here is you're getting the fielding that you expected, but you're also getting basically a 300 hitter with some power.
Well, the power is where I was going with that.
Especially the power I never expected.
The power is where I was going with that. Think about it. The power is something that Omar never had. He had the clutch and everything I just praised
him. I think 11 home runs in a season was his career high, if I'm not mistaken. Something in that neighborhood.
And right now, in what essentially is a season, let me look at it. Last year, he played 99 games. This year, he's played in 70 games. So there you go. That's, what, 169. So it's seven more than a complete season, right?
Okay.
He's got 20 home runs. You know, and that's, you were never going to get that. You were never supposed to get that from Francisco Lindor. This 22-year-old, by the way, hitting .307, 8 home runs and 37 RBIs. I want to give this line at you, to you real quick, and I know we got to take a break.
Don't forget the 12 steals. Those are always nice, too.
Absolutely. A great base runner and an exciting base runner, too. He makes things happen. He makes pitchers nervous. All of that kind of thing. But I want to read a few stats to you, and this is courtesy of Zach Meisel, who just joined us in the last hour. It was tweeted a couple of days ago when the most recent All-Star voting totals were announced, and I'm digging for it again. I wanted to talk about it when he came on, but I forgot to do that, so I've got to find it now. I might not be able to get it before we have to take this break, so I'll find it after, but He put together a nice little compilation of the American League shortstops who are ahead. Oh, I found it. Here it is. This was from June 21st. What was that, Monday? Tuesday.
Tuesday.
As of Tuesday, American League All-Star voting, shortstops. Bogarts, $2.1 million. I'll just do that.
Okay.
Escobar, second, 1.1 million votes.
That's Kansas City, isn't it?
Correct.
It's happening again.
Well, no, but the real thing we can talk about if we want to is Omar Infante, who was DFA'd earlier this week from Kansas City.
Don't have to remind me. I had him on my fantasy team, and I need a new second baseman now.
He was DFA'd, and he's fourth in the All-Star voting.
At least he won't win it.
Think about that, though. When you talk about just the blatant, despicable, reprehensible ballot stuffing of the Royals fans at games, and I know you're supposed to support your team. I get it. But
breaking it out, Bob, it's
a
Travis Sham mockery.
What's that?
I'm going to break out the word. It's a Travis Sham mockery. Yes, that's what it is.
Yes, it is a travesty of a sham of a mockery. It is all of those things. And he's fourth in the American League All-Star voting. I would not be surprised, since his name is already on the pre-printed ballots, I would not be surprised if they keep voting for him, even though he's out of the game. I gave you the names of Bogarts, Escobar, Tulowitzki. Fourth is Elvis Andrus, 642,000. And then Carlos Correa at 553,000. Francisco Lindor, well, Zach just put it this way, less than 553,000. Now let's look at their slash lines. Bogarts, 347, 398, and 510 with a 4.0 war, wins above replacement. Clearly deserves to be what he is, and that's the leader, and he should be the All-Star starter. No problem there.
I got no arguments with that either.
But let's get to Escobar. 242, 268, 290, your slash line, negative 0.9 wins above replacement. He's your second place guy.
Yeah.
Tulowitzki, who used to be an All-Star and an MVP, 206, 288, 400, 0.2 war.
If that keeps up, we're going to have the Colorado discussion.
Yes, we are. That's a very good point. Elvis Andrus, solid, 291, 339, 405, and a 0.9 war. And then Carlos Correa, less solid, 259, 359, 439, that's solid, 1.6 war. Now here's Francisco Lindor, trailing all of them by huge margins. 314, 375, 466, with a 3.2 wins above replacement rating. Francisco Lindor trails only Bogarts in batting average. He trails only Bogarts in slugging percentage. And he trails only Bogarts. Let me do it again. 5'10", 290, 400, 405, 439, and 460. He trails him, only Bogarts in all three categories of the slash line and only Bogarts in the wins above replacement. And it's not even close because the next guy after Bogarts with four and then Lindor at 3.2, then it's Correa 1.6, everybody else in 0 point something or negative 0 point something.
And what's interesting, if I may, real quick, those three names, Bogarts, Lindor, and Correa, that's your future of the shortstop position in the American League for many years to come.
Oh, no doubt about it. And Correa was, of course, the rookie of the year last year when it was kind of a battle between him and Lindor. They both came up at about the same time.
Bogarts is one of the Red Sox higher prospects that came up early last year, I want to say. Or late the year before.
That's exactly right. But I mean, I brought that up because I don't like the All-Star voting the way they do it. Obviously, here's a guy like Lindor who deserves to be second on that list clearly, and nobody even knows about him, and nobody's voting about him, and they don't draw enough people at Progressive Field out in Cleveland to vote for him, to get him up there in the totals. But his slash line, again, if you look at his average, his on-base and his slugging, second only to Bogarts in every category, second only to Bogarts in the league in wins above replacement, and he's not anywhere near to be found. So Travis Shamockery?
Travis Shamockery.
It is all of those things from the All-Star perspective, but most importantly, the reason I brought it up is what he's doing to help this team be the first-place team that they are. His offense is so much better than it was ever supposed to be. The Indians are now 11 games over 500 for the first time since 2013. And they are playing the way they are in large part because of this 22-year-old kid who doesn't know that, A, he's only 22 years old and isn't supposed to dominate a league like this, and, B, he doesn't know that you're supposed to have a sophomore slump after an incredibly solid rookie season. So the pitching, the power but lack of batting average that we talked about with some of the guys in the middle of the order. And then again, just really, really clutch hitting by guys that are sharing the wealth from, like I said, Chisenhall at 280 to Kipnis around 265 with some pop. They're getting production from Ramirez. They're getting production from so many different places. It doesn't look like a team that is built to fade away because somebody who's carrying them is going to freeze up or go cold, because it seems like there's somebody else already standing behind them waiting to pick them up, since they're not relying on one or two guys. They're just getting great performances from every starter, talking about in the rotation, and then almost everybody in the order. So that's what's really interesting going into tonight's series at Comerica. And that is what the Tigers, who have won four in a row on their own, have to deal with. So we'll break that down a little bit more as we continue. I need a timeout, though. Not before I tell you about LKQ Pick Your Parts. If you're looking for ways to save money when it comes to auto repairs, you want to get to LKQ Pick Your Part. Bring your own tools, pull the parts off the cars you want, and save big. Over 1,000 vehicles to choose your parts from at a clean, organized lot, and you can always find new inventory there, from transmissions to tires to rims to radiators, whatever you need. Pick your part today. Find the parts you need. LKQ Pick Your Part. Always buying used vehicles, too. So if you want to add your vehicle that's got some valuable parts on it to the collection for others to pick from, you can sell your car to LKQ Pick Your Part. Call 800-962-2277. If you've got a used vehicle for sale, you can save up to 90% on your auto repairs when you do the auto repairs yourself. At LKQ Pick Your Part, you're doing the work, so you enjoy the savings. If you love to work on your car and saving money, then you want to visit LKQ Pick Your Part. And remember, at LKQ Pick Your Part, all of their parts are always guaranteed, always. LKQ Pick Your Part on Hagman Road, just off East Alexis Road in Toledo. Let's get a quick timeout for SportsCenter. Come back, talk a little more baseball, maybe even hit that NBA draft a little bit too, as we head toward the finish line of a work week on a free-for-all Friday on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
106.5. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed. Welcome back as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. It is 4:46. Congratulations to Joe Pasquinelli. Did I do it right? Joe Pasquinelli?
That's right.
All right, Joe, good job. Joe in Toledo was the 10th caller, so he got the Marathon Classic tickets. And you know what? We've got a bunch more of those, so pretty much every day next week, we're going to be giving away Marathon Classic tickets. In fact, I've got a couple of other very cool things to do as well. Whenever we get an opportunity to contribute to your summer fun and recreation, we like to do it. We're going to give away some four packs of tickets to the LaGrange Street Polish Festival, too, which is coming up July 8th to the 10th. So obviously, both of those events are next month, so we have plenty of time next week to give those away.
2 weeks away for the festival one.
Right, right. But, I mean, it is in July, yep. next month in that regard. It's July as opposed to June. But anyway, just so you know, make sure that when we are in sports center breaks and that sort of thing, don't be tempted to punch buttons and look around elsewhere, because we're going to start giving this stuff away during the sports center breaks that we've got for you. So you got to make sure that you are paying attention if you'd like to cash in on some of these free prizes. By the way, speaking of cashing in, did you check out the My Toledo auction yet on 1065theticket.com? Our website right now is offering you a tremendous opportunity to save a ton of money on great products and merchandise and services, gift cards to one number of great places, all thanks to our wonderful clients and sponsors. And it's all a part of My Toledo auction at 1065theticket.com. The bidding for this auction is underway now. It started last night, and it goes until 11 a.m. Monday. So you have the whole weekend to bid. So check out some of the categories that are of the most interest to you. You know, landscaping, home improvement products, recreation products, pretty much anything you think of. Just to give you an example, a $500 gift certificate to Storm & Norman's Mattress Outlet. If you're looking for a new mattress, you're going to get a $500 gift certificate. By the time you're done bidding, you're probably going to pay roughly half that. Pennies on the dollar if you win those bids. Another example, Adirondack chairs from Myers Fireplace and Patio. Jewelry, like a 14-karat yellow gold diamond Journey pendant. I mean, there are so many things here. You take a ton of money off the retail price when you bid for them and win on the My Toledo auction. So get online. Register. You got to register to bid at 1065theticket.com. All right. A couple of other quick notes on baseball, just because we've spent a good deal of time talking about the Indians and the Tigers. And I love that, by the way, when these two teams play, Jim. You know, being here in Toledo, what have we always said on this show and at this station and being in this city that is beautiful about it? You know, you don't have just one team to lock in on. We sit in here halfway between Cleveland and Detroit, roughly, or halfway between Columbus and Ann Arbor, and we get the best of all worlds because we get to cover all of these teams. And when both of them are playing well at the same time, and you get the Indians and the Tigers in a series like this, I mean, not to sound stupid when I say, you know, double your pleasure, double your fun, but it really is. I'm going to enjoy the heck out of the series, whether the Indians win two in a row or two out of three, which would make me happy as an Indians fan, or the Tigers do. We're going to have something great to talk about here on the ticket.
Yeah, it definitely. It's going to be it'll be fun, that's for sure.
Yeah, and again, the pitching matchups that we talked about. But anyway, we spent a lot of time talking about that. Just a couple of other notes. I mentioned this to Zach Meisel and Anthony Fenech in the last half hour, or an hour ago, I guess it is now, about the pitching stats in the National League. There's something bizarre happening. And as Anthony Fenech said, you know, we talk about the best records being in the National League, too. Obviously, the Cubs are just far and away better than everybody else, 47 wins. Well, it's not far and away, because Texas has 47 wins as well.
Yeah, the Rangers are suddenly running away with that AL West. They're 10 games up. It's the biggest division lead in baseball.
Which is a little misleading, by the way, because that would make it seem like they're in a terrible division. The Astros are you know, a playoff team from a year ago, started very slowly. They have come on strong. First of all, they've won five in a row, and they're 37-36. That's only a game better than or a game behind Detroit, who's 38-35.
Right.
You know, just for comparison's sake. So what the Rangers are doing in the West is amazing, but it's not like, you know, the Astros and the Mariners, who the Tigers just swept, stink. They're both just, you know, being lapped by a really, really hot Texas team. But we, you know, Anthony was saying that the best pitching is in the American or in the National League because the best teams in the American League, and that's because they're getting fat on the worst teams. I'm sorry, I meant to say National League in both of those, because they're getting fat on the worst teams in the National League. The Cubs are 47-24. The Nats are 43-30. They're starting to have the year that they were supposed to have last year, even though they are struggling at the moment. They've lost five straight, and they still lead their division over the Mets and the Marlins by four, all right? And that's with a five-game losing streak running. But they're starting to have the same kind of season they were supposed to have a year ago when they were the trendy pick to win the World Series. Oh, by the way, I'll raise my hand. I picked them to win the World Series last year, and the Nats kind of internally combusted and didn't even make the playoffs. And then there's the Giants, who also have 47 wins. So the Cubs have kind of fallen back down to with the rest of the pack in terms of overall wins. But, you know, Anthony was saying they may be getting fat, those great pitchers and teams at the top of each division in the National League, on the teams at the bottom who are the worst in baseball. And I don't see that, at least in terms of wins and losses. The Braves are awful, yes. They're 25-47. But are they more awful than the Twins, who are 23-49 in the American League? No, they're obviously not. The Reds are awful at 28-45. Is that much different, really, than the Rays, who are 31-39? That's only three fewer wins. And then you look at the Padres, also 31-43, not too much different than the Oakland Athletics in the American League West at 30-42. I don't think it's a matter of getting fat off of the weak sisters of the poor in the National League when we look at these pitching stats. I think what we're watching right now, Jim, is a renaissance, a pitching renaissance, and it's just kind of all concentrated right now in the National League. Not all of it, obviously. You know, we talked about Danny Salazar, who's eighth in Major League Baseball with a 2.23 ERA, but just the sheer dominance of Clayton Kershaw and Jake Arrieta and Madison Bumgarner and Johnny Cueto right now, Noah Syndergaard, John Lester. All of these guys are in the National League, and they are kind of keying a pitching renaissance where they are relegating hitters to being, not even want to say just mere mortals, but some of the best hitters in baseball in the National League are being rendered helpless against these guys. I didn't even mention Strasburg, by the way, who got off to a bit of a slow start in terms of his own ERA and his own strikeouts and so on, but all he is 10-0. He's 10-0, and he's 18th in ERA at 2.90. Because of what they're doing in the National League. Clayton Kershaw, and I can't remember if it was Greenberg yesterday or if it was on one of the other ESPN shows that you hear every day right here on The Ticket, but what we're watching from Clayton Kershaw is the guy, and this is how Greeny or somebody described it, I wish I could give attribution to the quote, this is the guy you're going to tell your grandkids and your great-grandkids about. It's that good. It's, you know, when your grandfather may have told you about Sandy Koufax, or he may have told you about, I don't know, Bob Gibson or whomever, this is the guy you're going to be talking about. All-time greatness that can't quite accurately be described, even with numbers that are very descriptive. In 15 starts, 115 innings pitched, Clayton Kershaw is 11-1 with an ERA of 157. And his strikeout to walk ratio is the stuff that legends are made of. Before I give it to you, let me give you, for the sake of comparison, the other great, great pitchers we're referencing here. Jake Arrieta is 11-2, and he's got a 1.74. His strikeout to walk ratio is 107-35, and that's great. Madison Bumgarner is 8-3, and he's got an ERA of just 1.85. They're the only three pitchers in baseball sub 2 in ERA, right? His strikeout-to-walk ratio is 115-28. Stephen Wright of Boston, he's the only guy mixed in from the American League in the top 7 of the pitchers. Stephen Wright has a 2.01 ERA. He's 8-4 on the season. His strikeout-to-walk's 80-37. I'm giving you these things because I'm going somewhere with this. Johnny Cueto is a 2.06 ERA. He's got 96 strikeouts to 21 walks. So you get the kind of range where we are here. Strikeout to walk ratio for the next five best pitchers in baseball. 107-35, 115-28, 80-37, 96-21. Clayton Kershaw's strikeout to walk ratio is 141-7. He's walked 7 men all season, and he struck out 141 to lead all of baseball on his way to, as I mentioned, the 11-1 record and 157. What they are doing to the National League to some of the best hitters in the world, making them look silly, is just something that we need to appreciate. We're very fortunate we get to watch sports for a living, and every afternoon we get to talk sports for a living, either us to you or you to us. But I'm telling you right now, don't just take it for granted when you say, wow, what a nice season. You're watching the kind of thing that if your parents or grandfather told you about it from 45, 55, 65 years ago, you'd go, oh, my God. That's what you're seeing right now. Don't let that moment pass without understanding and recognizing its greatness. All right, that's it. I apologize if I didn't get anybody on in this last segment, but we are out of time. Mike Miller is sticking around. He is hanging around. He is next. Drive time right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We'll see you Monday at 3 o'clock. Have a great one.